listening to Abiding Hope Church's podcast of our weekly sermons. For more information about our church, please visit abidinghope.org.
Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew, the 16th chapter. From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "God forbid it, Lord. This must never happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Then Jesus told his disciples, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or what will they give in return for their life? For the Son of the human being is to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay everyone for what has been done. Truly, I tell you, there are some standing here who will not taste death before they see the Son of the human being coming in his kingdom." The Gospel of the Lord. So good to be back. So good to be back. I want to thank you for the opportunity to have a sabbatical. When I left here, I wasn't in a good place. And I didn't know if it was fatigue, if it was burnout, if I had lost passion. I didn't know really what was wrong. But what I discovered was I was exhausted. It was just raw fatigue. I was exhausted. And so these past 3 months have been the best sabbatical I've ever had. It's been very fruitful for me and an important time for me and my family. And so I want to say thank you for that. I'm back and I am energized and I am filled with passion and I am blessed to be a pastor here at Abiding Hope. So thank you. I also want to thank you because some of you may not know this, but in the beginning of June, my mother died. And it was a blessing to be on sabbatical at that time. I was able to be with her the last 10 days of her life, and it was horrible, absolutely horrible. I'm a pastor. I've walked with a lot of people through times of death, but in a moment like that for me, I'm not pastor. I'm son. I'm brother, husband, father, uncle. And it was an important time for me to be there to just concentrate on my mother and my family, and I'm grateful that I had that opportunity. So thank you for your love and your prayers and your support as my family went through that experience. One of the highlights of my sabbatical was going to the Holy Land with 60 of my closest friends from here at Abiding Hope. And what I learned was I should have gone to the Holy Land years ago. It was life-altering, transformative for me. I learned so much. But the experience itself of being there was life-changing. I really don't have words to describe what that experience was like. Getting to walk in the footsteps of Jesus and the disciples, seeing the landscape and the terrain, beginning to see how the stories interconnect and how one thing flowed into another. It was truly a remarkable time. And this passage we just heard really flows, it's to be connected with the gospel text we heard last week. And Pastor Jay preached on it, and the disciples were with Jesus in a place called Caesarea Philippi. Caesarea Philippi is above Galilee. It's in the north. It was in the territory of Tetrarch Philip. Philip was one of the sons of Herod the Great. And after Herod died, his territory got divided into four parts. And Philip got this northern part up there. And Philip created this town, Caesarea Philippi, the city, and he named it after Caesar and himself, right? He was trying to throw Caesar a bone and give him some credit. And Caesarea Philippi became a crossroads for trade. A lot of people coming from Persia or from what we know today as Iraq or Iran would pass down through Caesarea Philippi, heading down into Palestine, heading then into Egypt and parts of Africa to do trade. And they would stop there in Caesarea Philippi to eat, to rest, and also to worship. And in Caesarea Philippi, there's this cliff that has all of these etchings into the cliff where they had idols for various gods, gods from all over the world, so that the travelers could come through and they could offer tribute. They could offer sacrifices on altars in front of those idols. We've got some short video here that shows some of this. So you see those little openings there in the cliff. There would have been idols in those, and they all would have represented different gods from different places. And there were altars there where people could offer their tribute to those gods. So you see all of this, it's over the whole cliff. That cave was actually believed to be the entrance to Hades. If you want to go to Hades or get out of Hades, you would go in through that cave. And of course, there's been collapses and things. I'm sure it was larger or deeper at one point. Here's all our pilgrims there walking around. Some of you are in that video here this morning. But what's fascinating is Jesus is sitting there when he asks the disciples, who do people say that I am? Am I like one of these? Am I the son of a God like one of these idols, a stone idol, that you got to come and you got to offer an animal sacrifice, or you got to offer a tribute, some kind of monetary tribute in order to get your God's attention? That you're just a measly, broken, flawed human being, and God ignores you on most days, and you got to do something to get your God's attention so that maybe your God will throw you a bone, right? Is that who I am? And last week we heard Peter say, no, you're the son of the living God. A better way to translate that from the Greek is you're the son of the God of life. Not a stone God. You're not a God that we have to somehow do something in order to get God's attention. We don't have to come and offer animal sacrifices. We don't have to come to church and go through rituals and religious gymnastics in order to get God to pay attention to us. We don't have to give money in order to get God to honor us. Because our God is a God of life, living God. You want to see God? Look at life. Look at things that are alive. My son just adopted a chocolate lab. You know anything about chocolate labs? Labrador retriever? This guy, his name is Franco. He named him after Franco Harris. Just saying, Franco Harris, you know. And so this chocolate lab, he's about 18 weeks old right now, and he's already 50 pounds. But he thinks he's a little guy. I'll be sitting in my chair watching my TV and I can hear him coming. You know, you can hear him coming, and he runs in and he jumps up on my lap, and man, he's got energy. Franco has energy. And he gets up on me, and I like to grab his head as he's trying to lick my face. And I say to him, isn't it fun to be alive? Those molecules, those atoms that are in Franco were dead. They were in rocks. They were in something that wasn't living, but now they're in him and they're experiencing life. It's good to be alive. It's good to breathe. It's good to recognize life all around us. But what happens? We forget we're alive. We forget that life is a blessing. We become overwhelmed. I was just there not that long ago. We become overwhelmed with work and with family stuff and financial things and our own health and well-being. And we find ourselves in dark places where we forget to live. The stress overwhelms us. And sometimes we think life is a burden. It's a problem. It's something to medicate ourselves through. It's something to escape in some way, to just shut off because it's so hard. But the reality is, we're always dwelling in God. You can no more be separate from God as you can be separate from the universe. Is it possible to get on a rocket ship and outfly the universe? Uh-uh. You can't outfly God either. There's no situation you're going to face. There's nowhere you're going to go. There's nothing that's going to happen to you where you're separate from God. The problem isn't that we got to get God's attention in some way. The problem is we stop paying attention. We stop looking. We stop watching for how God is showing up in our lives. What would it take for you every single day to look for God, to see how God might be showing up? You got a little guy here who's just learning to walk, right? And he's got that stumble. That's God learning to walk. God's all over that. I think New Life, a child, is the universe becoming aware of itself, right? That this new life is waking up to itself. But how do we continue to be aware of God all over us in our lives? Do you go to work and look for God? Do you walk the streets of your neighborhood and look for God? Do you look at your spouse or your children and see God? So I spent a lot of time, and I'm writing a book about this, taking time to just look and see God. I think part of my problem before I went on sabbatical was I was too busy to do that. Isn't that weird to hear a pastor say that? You know, you get so focused on everything else, you forget to look for God. And then what happens is when I see God in a leaf, in a caterpillar, in these darn Japanese beetles that keep eating the leaves of my flowers, when I see God in that, what happens in me is, the first thing that happens is joy. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't the world beautiful? Aren't human beings beautiful? And then the second thing that happens is gratitude. I get to experience this. You don't just get to see beauty. You get to experience beauty and know what it feels like to be in the midst of beauty. We're surrounded by it. And I think our journey is, as human beings, isn't to try to get God's attention to do what we want. Our journey is to pay attention to how God's showing up and get on board. Participate in that. The last line of the text, I heard Peter, you know, Peter blew it once again, poor Pete. I can resonate with Peter. He just missed the point every time. But, you know, Jesus says, we're going to go to Jerusalem. They're going to kill me. But he said, on the third day, I'll be raised, right? That's in there. Peter didn't hear that. And maybe he did hear it. He just doesn't understand what it meant. But in the last verse of this passage, verse 28, Jesus says, the way it's translated in English, some who are standing here will not taste death before they see the coming of the reign of the Son of the human being. Now, in the Greek, the word some isn't actually there. It says whoever. Whoever is standing here will see the reign of God before they taste death. Jesus is saying right there in that moment, the reign of God isn't about after we die. It's not then. We've often thought about the reign of God is, you know, you die and you go to heaven. Well, I'm not saying that doesn't happen. I'm not saying the reign of God isn't there, but Jesus is making an emphatic point. It's here. It's now. And isn't it sad that some people will taste death and have never seen the reign of God? They've never seen it. Never seen God showing up. And so we who are on this side of the resurrection, we who have seen Jesus suffering on the cross and continuing to love while he suffered, continuing to see God in all things, even the men who drove the nails through his hands and his feet, as I told the children, he was then raised from the dead to show us that love and life win, to show us that God is always here, to show us that we don't have a God of wrath and violence and retribution, but a God of life, God who perpetually generates life. And so I want to challenge you this week, the same way I challenge the kids. Pay attention. Pay attention. Be intentional every day to watch for how God is showing up in your life. And when you see God showing up in your life, celebrate that. Pay attention to what's happening in you. See if you're feeling joy. See if you're feeling gratitude. And then act on it. If it's God, if you see somebody helping somebody, step in and help out also. If you see God in nature or in something beautiful, share that story with somebody. Go tell someone, I saw God today. I saw it in the sunrise this morning before I came here. That's true. I didn't just make that up. I was out walking at 6 a.m. and got to watch the sunrise. Tell somebody. And if you want, journal about it. Write about it. Sit down and just jot a short note about what you saw, what you experienced, and what it meant to you. What was showing up in you as you experienced God showing up? Because here's the thing. If you wait to look for God in crises, if you wait to look for God when difficulty is happening, when you wait to look for God when you're in pain, you're going to have a hard time seeing God in those moments. But if you practice every single day paying attention to what God is doing in your life, what God is doing in the world, when crisis hits, when stress hits, when adversity hits, you're ready. You're ready to breathe, take a step back, and see God in the midst of your struggle. And then that changes us. It changes how we feel. It changes our outlook. And God can then use us as instruments of hope and healing in the lives of others who are struggling, who are going through adversity. I heard a wonderful quote this week where the person said, live your life as though the only way it's valid is if God is real. Live your life in a way that only makes sense if God is real. You see, that's what Jesus meant when he said to Peter, you're putting your mind on worldly things, not on divine things. Let's put our minds on divine things. Let's see light and life and goodness everywhere. And let us be those instruments of hope and healing and vitality in the lives of others at work, at school, in our neighborhoods, at home, wherever we might find ourselves. Because that's why we're here. My prayer for you is that you don't taste death before you see the reign of God. May we all have eyes to see and hearts to experience so that we can live as the heart, hands, and feet of Jesus in this world. God loves each of you, and I do too. Amen.